Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We will dive headlong into the Cardinals and also into March Madness today on a couple of fronts. So Kent Summers, AZ Central Cardinal Insider, is going to Skype in from the Cardinals facility. I've let this drag here for a little bit on free agency because I'm not one of those that gets all wound up about day number one, day number two. You let the dust settle. It's usually the bad teams that go out and make a whole bunch of moves in a hurry. However, based on what I'm seeing from fans and just the gut feel that the Cardinals are not winning the free agent day, doesn't mean they have to do it on day one or day two. But when you bring in Carlos Dansby, which is great for fans of years gone by, and you bring in Phil Dawson, are you a better football team today when you see Calais Campbell walk out the door and you see Tony Jefferson walk out the door and you see Cooper walk out the door and you see players just, you know, walk out the door? You know, you start getting to a point where you're looking for upgrades on the scrap heap, or are you better served? Like, based on what the Cardinals have done so far, they have not gone out on the corner side. So you look at corners in the draft, and they've not done anything on the quarterback side. So the veterans that were out there, that wasn't of interest to them. So again, we're going back to the drafts, and Kent is much smarter than I'll ever be on all this stuff. So we'll have Kent Summers with us. It's fine. Matt Muehlbach, speaking of smart guy, Pac-12 network analyst, former U of A guard. Some of you yesterday got a little bent because I went after Sean Miller in a way that I wasn't going after him. I was merely pointing out, and it was mainly my conversation with Paula. Some of you just thought I was beating a dead horse on that deal, and that Paul and I were mixing it up. It was just the simple, I'm not saying anything about his job, but I'm merely pointing out, if he does not win big in this year's tournament, if they do not get to Glendale, it is a very disappointing season. Now, you could say that every year, right? But let's just be honest. The path that they have to get to Glendale is not that difficult. Lute Olson's the last one that was able to get to a Final Four. Sean has never once gotten to a Final Four. So, yeah, he can recruit big names. But until he's able to get a Final Four, that's just sitting there as a big fat zero on his resume. It doesn't mean he's a bad coach, but I get a little fatigued with people anointing those that are great if they can't get the job done. So, and especially this year, if Sean is able to get a Final Four, you think back, he lost Terrence Jones. He lost some guys, and he didn't have Trier for those 19 games. He's done a really good job of coaching, but I'm not going to be satisfied and sit here if they get to the Elite Eight and get eliminated again. Because Markkanen is not going to be back next year, and who knows about Trier? This is as good a group as he's had. So we're going to talk to Matt Muehlbach about that. LeVar Ball, it's really interesting. Last night, I don't know if any of you caught this, but ESPN put up a terrific piece, I thought, at the Ball household. And it was the three kids and the dad. And this morning, it's gone. Like, Eric, you can't find it anywhere. You looked and looked, and we weren't able to find it?
No, you linked it on your Facebook page.
My Facebook page,
and
yeah.
And now the video that you linked last night has been taken down, and there's a much less entertaining video up there that ESPN popped up.
Yeah, I mean, it's Scoop Jackson now just talking in a studio thing.
Yeah, with a couple cover shots of Ball's crazy dad.
Well, there was some stuff that he said in there, because I'm going to have to paraphrase now, and I hate doing that, because I'd rather you guys just see it, but, you know, he said that UCLA is exploiting his kids, so why can't he try to go make money off them? And he can control the situation better. The three kids are playing basketball in the backyard, and Lonzo says on the video, I am a one-and-done guy. So there's no mystery about when he's leaving. Not that there has been, but, you know, it's right before the tournament. And then the dad comes on and says, all three of my kids are going to be one-and-dones. Like, it's a sophomore in high school, okay? And then he comes out and wants the $1 billion shoe deal. Now, is there a point where you guys just want to tune him out? If you look at the college basketball season, just the season of college basketball, Eric, if I were to throw at you the two most interesting stories of players on the court this year, to me, have been Grayson Allen at Duke and Lonzo Ball at UCLA.
I don't think you'd get any argument from anyone on those two.
Well, and they're for different reasons.
Oh, both lightning rods of controversy, but yeah, for different reasons.
For different reasons. And
it's not so much, I shouldn't say that. This has nothing to do with Lonzo Ball. It has everything to do with his dad. Grayson Allen's actions have everything to do with Grayson Allen and nothing to do with his parents.
Well, and you see how Grayson Allen has handled it this
yep.
year. Grayson Allen, in January, everybody wanted him gone, vilified, throw dirt on him, get him out of here. And yeah, he still plays with a chip and sometimes a big chip. But look, I saw Dylan Brooks sucker punch a U of A player in the gut when they were playing the other night. That stuff happens. It's just it's not at Duke. It's at Oregon on Pac-12 Network, so nobody sees it and makes a big deal out of it.
Yeah, and everything Grayson Allen does from now on is going to be magnified 1,000 times because of
Grayson Allen.
And because of his past transgressions.
Right.
So, and that's, I think that's only fair that we treat him like that, because it wasn't just one isolated incident of him tripping. This dates back over a year now.
Okay, but let me flip this around then.
And he's a really good player. It's unfortunate that, you know, most people just are going to remember Grayson Allen. Duke.
Would you take Grayson Allen on your team if you're building a team?
Of course.
I would too.
Sure. He's the modern day Danny Ainge.
And is Krzyzewski handled in the right way in bringing him in as a sixth man?
I think so.
I think so too. Take that energy. Give me instant energy.
Another guy, Brad, that's had an up and down year. Coach K. I mean, that's a whole chapter in his book by itself.
But I guess what I'm saying is LeVar Ball doing something or anything that we as parents wouldn't want to do if we had a really skilled and gifted player? I would never go to the extremes of being a carnival barker, which is what he is. He's Don King. He is. This video, gosh, I wish they wouldn't have pulled it down, but there's probably some NCAA stuff in there. And there's just some stuff where he's talking about, you know, I walked on campus looking for the right girl because I knew if I had the right girl with me and that we're going to make great kids and all that stuff. I mean, it's fine to think it, but he's actually saying it. And I can't imagine people turning on Lonzo Ball. But here's where I've got to go with this. When it comes out that he's going to do a $1 billion shoe deal and he's got kids that are one and dones, as he is saying, is he already putting their eligibility into question because he's already making money? Did UCLA call and say, pull that down immediately? We don't need to lose Lonzo Ball. Have you already made a dime off of him when he has this big baller brand that he calls it? I guess is this the worst thing to happen for basketball? Or do you like seeing a dad? Some of you may like seeing a dad that's got three talented kids. Some of you may have those kids that are really talented. So that story's on my mind. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Is Lonzo Ball's dad the worst thing for college basketball? Is he just noise or is he entertaining? So Paula tweeted out a short time ago that Dan Majerle's name has surfaced for the job at Illinois. And Eric had a really funny response to that. So go ahead, you share it because I'll butcher it.
I just put up on Twitter, let's see if I can find it. I don't know, I wasn't even really trying to be funny. It's just
No, it was funny, though.
Just funny. I said, easy to connect the dots on this one. Something to the effect that, think about it, rhymes with Mary Valangelo. And you can probably figure out where there's smoke, there could be fire when it comes to Illinois. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so now Jerry... Jerry's a businessman. Jerry's got his name on the business school at Grand Canyon University. Jerry's also very close to Dan Majerle. If Jerry is advising Dan Majerle, this is not the first time that Dan's name has surfaced for other jobs. Let's just be clear on that. But Jerry is not the one that's going to get Dan a contract extension. But he can get Dan a contract extension if he links his name to Illinois. So if you're Brian Mueller and you're this close, you know, you're now eligible next year for the tournament.
Oh, that would be just a real kick in the stomach. I mean, you build everything, and you get to the point where you're about to walk through the hallowed halls of tournament and conference tournament eligibility, and Dan Majerle is like, yeah, bye.
All right. Now, if you're Dan Majerle, you've put all this blood and all this sweat and all these tears into getting GCU built. But you can go to the Big Ten.
Sure. which is a better job than UNLV, because in the last year there were whispers that UNLV had interest in Dan Marley.
Right, and Dan parlayed that into a bigger deal.
Of course, but I don't think you can compare coaching at Illinois to – although UNLV does have a good past, like coaching in the Big Ten and having a chance to go back to sort of his roots in the Midwest, I would think that'd be somewhat appealing to Dan.
But as Dan – here's my thing on it. Is the administration at Grand Canyon putting so much pressure on Dan to win because they've put everything into the basketball program? There is no football GCU. And so when Brian Mueller is not seeing the results that he wants to see, when they lose games to directional schools, as they did at times this year, does Brian come down the hall and show his frustration? I don't know this. I know there was some of that with Russ Pennell.
And if you're Dan, Brad, there's no guarantee that you're just going to automatically punch your ticket and get into the big dance.
Correct.
They haven't won the WAC yet. And they haven't won a WAC regular season title. So I know GCU thinks, we're just going to take that next step, and next year we're going to be in the tournament, and we're going to be an 11 seed or whatever. It doesn't always work like that.
Well, remember, who was a coach at Illinois at one time? Bill Self.
Yep.
And what did Bill Self do? I think Kansas might be a better gig.
Yep.
And he set himself up now to go into the Basketball Hall of Fame at some point. So Dan has done a lot at GCU. He's built it. But there's no reason for Dan to stay at Grand Canyon University if Illinois comes calling and they're going to take 5-6 Big Ten teams and they've got a television deal and you're not playing against directional schools. I mean, anybody who's going to make that argument, I understand you're wearing purple, but understand your place. That's why I've written, you've got to get out of the WAC. You just have to. It's a better job at Illinois. It just is. All right, Kent Summers up next. All things around the Cardinals. What is Kent's view on what has happened so far to this team? And does he get all these moves, or is he kind of scratching his head about what direction are they going here? And the Seahawks did make a move on a running back today. I'll get Kent's thoughts on that, too. He'll Skype in next. And then Matt Muehlbach in about 10 minutes. I'm Brad Sussmat. It's been a busy offseason for the Arizona Cardinals, at least watching players leave, some coming in. Kent Summers joins us now, AZ Central Sports, covers the Cardinals inside and out, the best in the business via Skype from the Cardinals facility. All right, just plain softball throw it up there at you. What do you make out of their offseason so far here in free agency?
I think it sort of fulfilled what they told us going into it, that their priority was going to be to take care of their own. And I think they would point all the way back to re-signing defensive lineman starter Josh Morrow in January and then keeping Jermaine Gresham, Chandler Jones, recently re-signing Andre Ellington. They knew all along they weren't going to be able to spend the money or weren't going to spend the money to keep Calais Campbell and Tony Jefferson in particular. Big money deals elsewhere. They didn't figure those guys into the budget here. I think they can make up for Jefferson. Calais, I'm a little questionable about, even though they're deep with some talent on the defensive line, they don't have anybody quite like him.
What are they losing in him that's not obvious? I mean, we see the numbers. We've seen his leadership. To you, what are they losing for a guy that chose Jacksonville over here?
I think they're losing a very versatile defensive lineman who's coming off his best season. You know, he's big enough. You could play him out in a five technique on the end. You could move him inside as the Cardinals often did. He occupies a couple of people inside. He makes it difficult for quarterbacks to step up in the pocket. I think over the years, he really improved his run defense, and he's one of the better interior linemen against the run. So you're losing a guy who's very durable, who's there day after day, not only in games, but in practice. And, you know, you're losing a guy who, has been a big part of this organization, one of the really good guys in the locker room. I don't know that the organization ever asked Calais to do something that he declined to do. So losing a pretty special guy both on and off the field.
Was this a tough decision at the end of the day for them, though, when it came to dollars and cents? Or was this just, look, it's just time?
No, I don't think it was a tough decision for them at all. They, you know, made him an offer, I think, that would have been around $10 million a year. The reaction I got from fans of like, wow, that's a lot of money. Well, yeah, it is, but it's also a pay cut from what he made last season. And he was coming off his best year, and he's only 31 at the start of the season. I think the Cardinals looked at it the other way. Calais has been playing for 9 years. There's a lot of wear on him. Supposedly, he's played a lot of snaps. He is 31, and you don't build a team by giving 31-year-old defensive linemen 4 or 5-year deals.
What does this say about Robert Kimdiche and being ready to come in? Does it say anything at all? Are we supposed to read that they believe he's ready?
Well, they can say that they believe that, but I think everybody's got to see it. The pressure's on him. This is why he was drafted for this moment. And there's not one thing he did last year as a rookie that makes you think he's ready to step in and be anywhere close to what Calais Campbell is. You know, from May through November, Bruce Arians was very critical of the first round pick, saying he needed to mature, needed to learn how to work in the NFL. So it led you to believe there were questionable practice habits, study habits. The tune sort of changed toward the end of the year, and especially did when we talked to Arians last week at the Combine. He said most of Kandichi's problems as a rookie were resulting from an ankle injury suffered right before training camp. I'm not buying it. You know, the reason he fell to the Cardinals at the bottom of the first round or there were questions about work ethic and character, and he didn't dispel those last year. It's a huge, huge year for Kimdiche and a big year for the Cardinals.
No, I agree with you on that. It really comes down, Kent, the last two first-round picks. You know, if DJ Humphreys can show something, but if he doesn't, then you have to start putting him in the missed category. Kimdiche clearly last year was on scholarship. So it's really the last two first-round picks I'm looking at of this organization saying you can't miss on two.
No, and especially when you're Steve Keim and you're one of your tenants, then the thing you preach all the time is we need players who love football. We need players who are passionate about football. I think the difference between Humphreys and Kimdiche is Humphreys proves that he wants to be a player. To me, the way he attacked last offseason, working out with LeCharles Bentley, former NFL lineman, day after day on his own, showed up into camp in much better shape. He worked on his body during that year. He didn't play. I thought he played pretty well last year, and they're going to play him at left tackle now, which, you know, I'm a little questionable if that's a wise move. But
correct.
I think DJ Humphreys really benefited from that redshirt year, and we'll see if Kimdiche follows in those footsteps.
Okay, we're talking with Kent Summers, AZ Cardinals insider, AZ Central Cardinals insider. Andre Ellington resigns. So you put a tweet out that the team sees him as more of a wide receiver. I'm kind of befuddled by this move by them and that they couldn't find somebody in free agency. So tell me about this move with Ellington.
Well, I think they wanted somebody, another running back with pass-catching ability, somebody who could step in and do some of the things David Johnson does. They're familiar with Ellington. He's familiar with the offense. It's a very soft market for free agent running backs. And Ellington was probably smart by taking the one-year deal to come back here. The Cardinals needed some depth there with both, you know, Chris Johnson, Ellington, and Steph Taylor all being unrestricted free agents. I'm sure I haven't seen the money deal. I'm sure he's working for, you know, close to the minimum. So I think it's probably a good deal with both sides. I think what Andre's got to prove next year, if he does play running back, run tougher, not go down as easily. If he's going to be able to step in and play for David Johnson, he's got to be able to run between the tackles, not, you know, 10, 15 times a game, but at least 5 times a game and not go down as easily as he did last year. I think it's a smart move moving him to receiver maybe more often than he'll play running back and get him out in space, work him that way. That's where he'll be. That's where he'll excel.
Two other questions and we'll let you go. And I appreciate your time. Carlos Dansby comes in, Dawson comes in to kick, two veterans. Do you like these two moves?
I do like the moves. I like the Phil Dawson move. I mean, I know he's 42 years old, but, you know, we watched this team lose at least 3 games last year because of the kicking game. It wasn't all Chandler Catanzaro's fault, but part of it was. And clearly they were concerned, I think, about Catanzaro's mental makeup. Could he bounce back from mistakes? Was this going to impact him going forward? And there are no such concerns with Phil Dawson. I think that's a very good move. Dansby, yeah, I mean, bringing back a 1-year deal, making, you know, $2 million a year if he plays a lot. He walked into the facility the other day, and I was told that immediately the whole mood brightened around Cardinals headquarters. He's a very popular guy here, not only with his bosses, but a guy with his teammates. He takes great care of his body. he, you know, not many 35-year-old guys can play inside linebacker, but it is a concern. How's he going to hold up? But it sure is, will be intriguing to watch him if he's starting next to Deion Buchanan. You know, and then to make up for Tony Jefferson, they add Antoine Bethea from the 49ers, another guy who's over 30. I think a big thing in this, Brad, is the team is looking ahead a year from now in free agency. You know, they're thinking the way this free agency has gone, they're going to get some decent compensatory draft picks in 2018. Don't dismiss that that's part of the thinking here.
All right. And finally, before I let you go, and I get asked this by fans, can you take anything away that 5 weeks from now in the draft, do you see their plan? To me, it seems like it's got to be corner with their first round pick. And yet there's fans that say they've got to draft a replacement for Carson in that first round slot. You make anything out of these moves to show their hand for the draft?
I think it could be either one of those guys. I think it could be a receiver also. If somebody, if they fall in love, they've got to find a replacement for Larry Fitzgerald. I will say with cornerbacks, talking to people at the combine, including Mike Mayock, they think this is a very deep draft in corners, that you can find a starter in the second and even into the third round. So I don't know if that plays into their thinking or not. We'll see if they love one of these quarterbacks enough to take him at 13, whether it's a Deshaun Watson or a Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. That'll be intriguing to watch. Either one of those three selections, none of those positions would surprise me with that number one pick.
Stay well. Appreciate your insight as always, Kent. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Kent Summers there via Skype from the Cardinals facility. Good stuff on that front. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Matt Muehlbach is next. We'll talk with Matt about U of A and their tournament setup with Sean Miller, all about March Madness. That's on the other side. Stay with us. You know, what's interesting about the tournament is Brad Sussmat with you, Sports 360 AZ, and we partnered with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Some of you U of A fans get all worked up when I merely point out that they should be playing in Glendale and that Sean has a very talented team and the path is not the most difficult, like I'm ganging up on Sean Miller. No, Lute Olson took a team to the Final Four and won. Sean is 0 for 26 in terms of getting to Final Fours. He's a terrific coach. He has a great team. He has a lottery pick in Markkanen. He's got a terrific guard in Trier. I followed them throughout. Not banging on Sean. It's just anybody who's going to say, well, if we get to the Sweet 16, this is a great year, and Elite Eight, there's no Wisconsin this year. So just breathe a little bit. Some of you understand. You see where I'm going with this. Here's Matt Muehlbach now, a former Wildcat, Pac-12 network analyst, does a terrific job. So the path for Arizona, am I wrong on this one that I should be expecting to see them in Glendale, Matt?
Well, I mean, I think I would agree with you that I think the path is pretty favorable. You know, I think you look at it, and we've seen over the years, you know, with every team, you see, like, you know, some big hurdles in the way. I mean, I think Gonzaga is in a weird way, like, underrated. I mean, I think they're obviously, you know, seeded first, but I think a lot of people don't believe in them. And I think it's the best Gonzaga team they've ever had, and I think they're really good. But I like, you know, I really like Arizona's draw. I think a number two in the West is the perfect draw for them. It takes a little bit of pressure off. I think Gonzaga has the pressure of A, being the number one, but B, being a team that's never made it, you know, to the Final Four. And so I think that's going to carry with them some pressure for sure. And I like the fact, I guess third, I didn't mention this, or C, is that Arizona lost to them. I think that kind of psychological advantage of, you know, losing to a team earlier, and, you know, Arizona didn't have Trier and didn't have, you know, PJC with them. So I think it all stacks up in a very favorable, you know, manner. I mean, with that said, Brad, you know, I mean, it's there's a lot of luck and other things that go into it. But based on what I just said, I came away really, really positive about it.
Well, Arizona gets to the Final Four if they do what? Fill in the blank on this one. If they rebound, that's my view on it. If they rebound, I think they get to the Final Four.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I mean, I was saying that in the studio the other day. You have coaches like Dana Altman, who, if you listen to him after a poor game, almost invariably every single time he says, we didn't move the ball. You know, the ball stuck. We didn't pass it. And that's kind of the thing for them that is, you know, kind of their deal. And with Sean, it almost every time this year has been rebounding. You know, the UCLA game at home, they didn't rebound. The I'm trying to think back to the Gonzaga game. I'm not sure if they rebounded there. You know, the Oregon game was an aberration in the sense that Oregon just hit, you know, 16 threes up in Eugene. So, but I agree with you. I think that's a huge part of it. I sort of had been thinking, you know, the key to the team was getting Markkanen and Trier sort of on the same page, you know, the two stars. And I really think they were not on the same page. And not in a bad way. The chemistry wasn't there. It just wasn't clicking. And then all of a sudden I felt, you know, the game a week and a half ago against ASU and then the Pac-12 tournament, for whatever reason, it just started to click. It just started to work, and you could see both of them playing well at the same time, and they really hadn't done that. They maybe did it the first game, you know, that Trier came back against UCLA, and then since then it's been a struggle.
Right.
And finally seemed to click, you know, this last week or so, and I think that would be the other key. Because you've got to have your stars play really well, you know, in those big games.
Talk about Matt Muehlbach, Pac-12 Network. Of course, the tournament gets started with USC from the Pac-12 standpoint against Providence in the play-in game. Let me go back on Markkanen and Trier. The development of Markkanen or Trier coming off the suspension, tell me the more impressive story to you between those two players, if you could split it.
Well, I mean, I think what Trier did is phenomenal. To miss 19 games and really come back, you know, ready to play. I think too, just sort of mentally, you know, what he went through. I mean, that was an incredible a few months where there was so much sort of questions about it. You could really have seen a player, you know, kind of lose their mind over that whole thing.
Sure.
And every week, you know, now that we know what happened, sort of every week, you know, waiting for, you know, blood test to come back and you're thinking you might be ready to play and just sort of all the angst that went through that. And I just think the way he handled it, you know, kind of dealing with it himself and sort of still maintaining chemistry among the team. And now that chemistry is still there and obviously playing well. To me, kind of what he went through was as impressive as anything I've seen from a player, because there's so many kind of parts of that you could kind of lose confidence or hope or whatever it was, and he just maintained it the whole way through, and you know, to his credit.
In a Markkanen's case, if you look at his development, he's a one and done guy, right, Matt? I mean, you look at him and he's every NBA guy when they roll through here,
yeah,
he's a top 10 pick. I mean, he's Dirk with a better outside shot, perhaps.
Yeah, that's to me been the best comparison. You know, we never saw Dirk play in college, so we don't know what he would have looked like at that stage. But he certainly seems like that. You know, I think I've been most impressed with just the way he kind of, you know, goes about his business. I mean, he's as solid as a kid, you know, that you're going to find. Just incredibly, you know, even keel. Business guy and just wants to play, you know, just easy to root for, you know, works hard. And I mean, his talent, I said the other day on the studio, I think he's the best college 7-foot shooter in history. I mean, I don't remember a 7-footer ever. Now in the pros, we've seen it, you know, in Dirk, you know, Dirk's a Hall of Famer. Dirk's maybe the best 4-man in history. So, you know, Markkanen's got a long way to go there.
Right.
And we've seen other 7-footers in the NBA shoot. But I don't remember a college kid ever shooting it like he did at 7 feet. And he's a legitimate 7 feet, as we've talked about. And, you know, he went through that slump. And it was interesting because I think that was actually in some ways a good thing for him, because it really helped him develop and focus a little more and start to think about getting inside. You know, he had really gotten away from taking what the defense had given him and became just a shooter. And, you know, once he went through that little slump, because they were making it so hard for him to get shots off And when he did, it was so contested that, you know, he finally had to go inside, work on that inside game, the post-up game, use his size inside. Teams were essentially just switching on him at the perimeter and just getting right inside of him. And so, you know, he had to counter that, which he did. And I think his game now, if you watch him, is more balanced, you know, today than it was back in January.
Talking Pac-12 teams in the NCAA tournament with Matt Muehlbach from the Pac-12 Network. Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Every day there's a new story involving LaVar Ball, not Lonzo Ball. How much of a distraction do you roll your eyes at this? Do you see that it's just a business ploy on his part? Or how do you process the daily story around Mr. Ball?
In some ways now I just kind of roll my eyes. I mean, he just seems in some respects to almost be disrespectful to the game. I mean, saying you could beat Michael Jordan in one-on-one is laughable. I guess there's other arguments. He's sort of, you know, making a name for himself and PRing his sons and so on and so forth. I don't really think it's helpful. Although I think, you know, Lonzo's handling it great.
Yeah.
He's just not, some respects maybe it takes the pressure off him in the sense that, you know, everybody's focused on his dad now. But I don't even think it's like, I don't even want to hear it anymore. I don't even think it's really a story. I think I've watched Lonzo play this year. I love his game and seems like a really good kid. And, you know, he just goes about his – that's what's so ironic is he just goes about his business in such a, you know, kind of humble way, just plays the game and doesn't really say anything. In fact, seems very quiet, if anything. So, you know, I don't think it'll be a huge distraction for him. I mean, it's been going on now, you know, for a month or two, and he seems to be kind of just doing his thing.
What's interesting to me on this is if you're the Suns and they're going to have a high pick, you've got to consider all factors. You know, when Mr. Ball says, you know, I want him to play for the Lakers. Well, if you draft a kid and after his deal's up, you know, you're going to lose him. That may be the extreme. It may be the negotiating side of it. But I think if you're the Suns here in Phoenix, you have to look at the dad. You have to look at the whole deal. And watching Lonzo play, I want him on my team in a heartbeat. Your point about the dad being terrific or the kid handling is terrific. Just don't know how much you weigh the dad if you're Ryan McDonough and if you're the Phoenix Suns, because you have to do that.
I think you do. I mean, like you said, it's the whole package. You have to look at and maybe interview, you know, your interview may be tailored towards some of those questions. Heck, you may have to interview the dad.
Yeah, right. That's right. No, it's true. It's true.
You know, it's a possibility. And you've got to think through all those things. And I think in some ways it's interesting. This draft is so much fun because there's so much talent. But it's tough too. This is one of the tougher drafts ever because you've got a kid like Ball. You know, you just mentioned the positives, but also potential negatives and things you have to sift through. You got a guy like Markelle Fultz. Everyone's saying maybe the first pick, and his team won two games in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, to me, is a pretty big red flag with a kid that I am admittedly maybe the best player, you know, in the draft. And so kind of weigh that sort of thing. And then you got kids like Markin, you know, project him, you know, down the line 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, you know, the 7-footer that can shoot like that, there's no one like that. And so, you know, where do you put him in the draft? And so it's a fun draft because there's tons of other talent I didn't mention, you know, the point guard for De'Aaron Fox for Kentucky and Smith for North Carolina State. And there's some really good talent in this one.
All right, I'll get you out here in about a minute. Oregon, Boucher injury, everybody's saying they're not going to make it past Sweet 16. What do you think on Oregon's front? Too much to overcome?
You know, it might be. It's a huge blow. Kills their depth. He was, you know, having the tandem of him and Bell, you know, the double shot blockers, and they didn't, a lot of times didn't play them together. And they did that on purpose because they would put Dylan Brooks at the four. So it was an incredible sort of, you could get one in and the, you know, get those guys interchangeable. I will say this, though, you know, look back to the game Saturday. Oregon lost to Arizona by 3, you know, without Boucher. Now, granted, Arizona kind of controlled most of the game.
Yep.
But, you know, Oregon shot it terribly from 3. I don't remember what exactly they were, but, you know, their 3 of their guards, Ennis, Benson, and Pritchard, were 0 for the game, didn't shoot it well, and they still only lost by 3. I you know, wouldn't count them out. I looked at their bracket, though. It's a tough bracket. They have a really tough bracket to me that they're in. So, you know, without that depth, it's going to be a lot harder. With it, I mean, I think with him, I probably had them going, you know, going to Glendale. And without it, it's going to be, you know, their odds obviously drop. But love Dana Altman and what he does. And I, you know, wouldn't totally give up on him for sure.
Stay well. Appreciate your time as always and insight. See you down the road. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Brad. Take care.
Good stuff there with Matt Muehlbach, Pac-12 Network. Appreciate his time and insight on a lot of different fronts. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now if you want to check it out at sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona, Arizona, Arizona-centric. Thanks for being with us. A couple other things before we wrap it up for today. The Suns are off tonight. They host Sacramento tomorrow. I saw where the Lakers shut Mozgov down, so their tank mode has gone up. Then again, the Suns have shut down Tyson Chandler. They shut down Brandon Knight. So just keep getting younger. Devin Booker is starting to walk with a limp. He can't play. He's off. Eric Bledsoe, flu-like symptoms, back spasms, anything. I mean, it's Sacramento tomorrow night. There's a very good chance the Suns could screw this up and win tomorrow night. San Antonio won last night, so they're tied with Golden State for the best record in the NBA. And Steve Kerr's gotten hammered for resting his guys. And my stance on this is a coach can do what he wants, but if you're the NBA, you've got this whole deal with teams that are tanking right here in Phoenix, and I'm encouraging them to tank because there's no penalty. There's no penalty at all. None. In fact, it should be encouraged after watching 7 years of not being in the playoffs. Somebody wrote, maybe it was Espo. Espo wrote something about the Suns are going to be a playoff team or a title contender in 2020. Did you see that, Eric? It was on social media.
I did not see that.
I want to say it was something along the lines of title contending.
2020. Maybe. We're in 2017. So that gives you 2018 and 2019 to ramp up to being a title contender.
Yeah, and I could be wrong on that. I could be wrong. Maybe it was him saying they're going to be a playoff team, but that's still, when it's a decade of not being in the playoffs and it's the Suns, I mean, come on. You can't get all that wound up. And Espo writes some great stuff on the site. He's doing great work, but man, sometimes just breathe a little bit. ASU open spring football today. Jordan Hamm is out there, and Jordan will have some stuff up on the website later today about ASU. The only story really around ASU football is all these quarterbacks, and we know what's going to happen. One or two of them are going to transfer. That will be the overriding story, and Todd will say we'll decide our starting quarterback, and we'll probably play two of them the first game of the season because that's what Todd does. It would be very un-Todd Graham-like if he stepped into the microphone and said that this guy is our starting quarterback moving forward. Maybe that would be a good way to go. Or maybe it's the way of him keeping all these quarterbacks together. Because if the minute that he steps up and says, this guy is our guy, Blake Barnett is going to be our starting quarterback for the 2017 season, then Bryce Perkins, who I think is going to leave anyways, Manny Wilkins, who probably could leave, Dylan Sterling Cole could get out of here. There's three of them that could say, okay, well, that's his guy, then I'm gone. See you later. That could happen. And then you're left with Ryan Kelly and Brady White, who's not at 100%. If they lose three of those guys, that's going to be a big blow to them, obviously. But the flip side of it is maybe they need to shed some of those guys, not just one of them. Maybe a few of them do need to go and move on.
Because Ryan Kelly's going to redshirt, I would think, right?
You would think, but who saw last season coming?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they went through quarterbacks on a weekly basis.
Right. I mean, but to that point, how did they start out the season? You know, we're sitting here all summer waiting to see who the quarterback's going to be. Maybe if you went the route of, we know Josh Rosen's going to be the quarterback at UCLA. We know that USC has got their quarterback in place in Sam Darnold.
Yep.
In fact, that's become, to me, one of the best storylines in this offseason. Josh Rosen was off the radar last year. Got hurt. Josh Rosen was supposed to be all that.
Team underperformed.
Sam Darnold wasn't even a starter, and now he's probably a Heisman Trophy guy.
He definitely is.
So, and both those guys could be top quarterbacks in the draft of 2018. You know, so, and as I was talking to Kent earlier about quarterbacks, if you're Steve Keim, you also have to look at who are the guys that could be coming out next year. If you're gonna stick with the two vets again, you can go find a journeyman. You can go find a guy like Matt Barkley, as they had, and stick him there and say, you know what, next year we think Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen are better prospects than this year.
Well, Darnold was a true freshman last year, so he has to stay in school.
Another year. Yeah, you're right. So you're right. My bad.
He's a 2019.
But in Rosen's case,
he could come out next year.
Rosen come out next year, and in the Heisman Trophy race, you would have to put both those guys as early names to consider.
I would think Darnold has to be the number one, the way he ended last year.
But if you're Todd, you're sitting over here, it's like Rich.
Uh-huh.
You know, is Brandon Dawkins going to be your starting quarterback? Is Khalil Tate going to be your starting quarterback? Who is going to be your starting quarterback?
But isn't that the theme every year in Tucson for the most part?
But it's been the theme here. That's my point. It's have some consistency unless you're afraid you're going to lose some guys.
And the expectations for ASU is what? 8 wins would be a good year for ASU?
Well, look, if they lose lose to U of A and they win 6 or 7, I think Todd's going to feel heat if they win 6 or 7 games. Todd's going to feel heat. Now, he's got the boosters. He's got some big cigars on his side. But no.
And don't write off that Texas Tech game as a win, because we've seen in the past how ASU does when they play in these Texas Classic games against teams like Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Those usually don't end well.
They don't end well. And I think the other story is Dan Marley, Paula, put on Twitter that his name is being linked to Illinois. This makes an awful lot of sense on a lot of fronts. Is this leverage on Dan's part? That's part of the game that is played. Is this Jerry saying, my allegiance is to Illinois? I feel better about Illinois than I do GCU.
Would Jerry leverage Illinois against GCU?
He's a businessman.
Yeah.
He's a businessman. If you're Dan Marley,
I just thought of that. The light bulb just went on. Would Jerry?
Yes.
Okay. I probably tend to agree with that.
Yeah. That's nothing. He's been a shrewd, smart businessman. If Dan Marley is his favorite son, or maybe there's some things that he is seeing at GCU that aren't quite copacetic with what he wants them to be. You know, they're stuck in the whack right now. And as long as they're stuck in the whack, Dan has to win the conference tournament in order to do anything. You go to the Big Ten and you end up finishing 5th in the Big Ten, you're going to make the tournament. You know, you're not having to pound on doors and say, look, we're playing directional school A, B, or C. These aren't swipes towards GCU. This is just a fact, guys. This is why I've written and said you've got to get out of the whack. So, and there's going to be some other jobs that come open, too, where Dan could be pursued. You know, but Lorenzo Romar's status is supposed to be solidified by the end of this week, one way or the other. Sports360AZ.com. I'm just saying Washington may come open. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out at Sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona centric. High school, college, pro college, high school. Makes no difference to us. If it's a good story to tell, we're on it. We have our TV show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona with 5 airings tonight, 14 airings over the next 3 days. Appreciate the partnership with Fox Sports Arizona. Have a good day.